Who wants to start off?
You do.
Yes, every time I do, though, they make fun of me.
That's the fun part.
Do you want to?
I can.
Doesn't seem to make sense to make the sick guy introduce.
Of Fangs and Fonts. Today we'll be touching Your Book Is Not a Movie with your hosts. I'm Yanara.
I'm Roland.
I'm Ocean.
I'm Voice.
And as previously mentioned, we'll be doing with Your Book Is Not a Movie. We've actually got a lot planned out for this one, oddly enough.
Yes, turns out we had a lot to say about the particular issue. So we sort of came up with this one this evening.
Well, eating delicious, delicious burgers.
Well, eating delicious burgers. And this is something that I've always noticed about certain stories, is that your book cannot be portrayed in the same way that, you know, the blockbuster you saw last week is. There's a lot of visual cues that people tend to notice in movies that they're like, hey, my book can be like this. And then they write it, and then it's not quite what they it doesn't quite get the rousing reviews that I think they were hoping for.
I think it's something that you usually see along more amateur writers, or people who are just starting, inexperienced writers who are just getting into it. They see a movie, and like all of us, you know, they saw Pacific Rim, or they saw, you know, some moving, touching movie, and they were just like, oh man, if I could write like this movie, people will, you know, my books will fly off the shelf. I really want to write something that's like this. And then they'll sit down and they'll write just like that movie. And then so they turn around and go, well, why isn't selling? Why are people, you know, giving me a bad review? Why, you know, why is this not the same? And there's a number of reasons why that is. You're writing a story, not a movie, is the primary one that's the seems like the most obvious. That is, unless, of course, you are actually writing a movie, in which case you're writing a script, you're not writing a story.
So let's take a minute to discuss how these types of problems arise. Like, usually when you're writing an action scene, a lot of people see, you know, think like a Bruce Lee action scene, or flashbacks that characters get to something that happened previously in the book to sort of reconvey information. And when you try to convey that kind of concept in writing, I think with the way that people try to implement it, the meaning is lost.
There are ways that you can implement it in writing. However, they are not exactly the same method you would use if you were, say, writing a movie script. Same thing goes with character development and certain visual cues that you find on film that are there to empower the movie. This doesn't quite have the same impact when you're writing a story. And with character development, there are certain things that people will put into, you know, a movie, whereas in because of the nature of a story, you often have far more room in writing a story to be able to develop a character. And if you give it the movie treatment, you're not necessarily going to get the same level of development that you could actually be getting, and thus making your story a better story.
The subtle cues that you often see in movies and types of things like that are very different from the subtle cues that you're also going to be putting into your story. Because a lot of things, once you write about them, you are automatically drawing attention to them, as opposed to something like, say, Inception, where you have the tops or the person's totem. They're a very subtle cue that, unless you're paying attention, you don't notice that. But if you write about them in the same way, that's going to draw a lot more attention to that item than in the movie.
Exactly. Kind of goes back to what we had mentioned once before, with a case of, if it doesn't need to be in the book, don't write it. with the amount of visual information you're given in a movie, you could easily throw in the shadow figure in the background and no one's going to blink twice because there's 16 other people walking around. Whereas if you're writing a story and you say there's 16 people walking around in the background and there's a shadowy figure, you're going to go, one, well, okay, why is there 16 people? Why have you described 16 people? And, okay, why is there a shadowy figure? That's actually really obvious. You lose a lot of that ability to be subtle when you're trying to write like a movie.
And this goes to our first point. One is a visual format, one is not. This may seem obvious, but a lot of people seem to tend to forget it. Especially when, and this is what I said, it's usually amateur or inexperienced writers, just because, as again, they see something that really excites them, they want to put it down on paper, and unless you have some kind of writing skill to it, you're not going to realize that there's a certain transition that has to happen between writing, you know, what you see in a, say, anime versus writing your fanfic.
It's also very easy to overstimulate your reader when you're describing too many things happening at once.
Or lose your reader.
and by overstimulation or boredom, I mean, yep. One of the two. If you have too many things going on that your reader can't comprehend what point you're getting at, you're going to lose your reader. And if you're just too scatterbrained trying to describe all of the things that you want to happen in this book at the same time, you're going to lose your reader.
So our first point here, and possibly the most important one, that, and we you hear us say this over and over and over again, and we've heard it stated at cons, it's the biggest piece of advice we can give any person who wants to be a writer. Read books. Read a variety of books. Reading books exposes you to various ways of writing various scenes, various situations, how to handle certain things. Roland's got a note here about take the time to note how a book presents its information versus a movie. There's a lot of written aspects that don't transfer well from a book to a movie and vice versa. Narrative voice always works better in books. Flashbacks and visual cues tend to work better in movies, where a viewer can sit back and take in the information as opposed to reading it, which comes across as very dry, unless done extremely appropriately.
And it's not to say that these type, like say the visual cues and the flashbacks, for example, they're not ineffective. Where a lot of people go wrong is how they present this kind of information. When inexperienced writers write something that's, you know, all up in their head, it's very easy to miss what the reader is going to miss by not being able to see your thought process. So you need to take the time and walk yourself through, okay, what do I need to put down on paper to convey this particular point?
And one way of doing that, in this day and age, it seems a lot more people are watching movies instead of reading the books that they're based off of, or vice versa. Read the books, watch the movies, and compare the two. There's a reason that a lot of people enjoy the books over the movies. Very rarely do you ever see a case where the movie is better than a book, like Stardust. And generally, it's because someone has taken something and made it that much more. Stephen King's The Mist, the short story versus the actual movie itself. The movie itself ends on a far more brutal note than the book. It's effective, it's creepy, and it works extremely well for the movie they've set up, which for the most part follows the book beat for beat. If you end up comparing the two, you'll be able to see how the author took certain themes and characters within the movie and actually kind of blossomed them in this book, hence one of the reasons why books tend to be better. You'll also see how they handled certain action scenes and certain subtext and certain subtleties that, you know, were in the movie suddenly on the page.
I can't think of many movies that are better than the books, like, offhand. I'm willing to bet that's not entirely true, but
you just can't think of any at the moment?
I can't think of any at the moment. Well, example I do think of that comes to mind is the Planet of the Apes, the book ending versus the movie ending. Whereas instead of the Statue of Liberty at the end of the movie, it's like a giant chimp head or something like that. It seems to be an otherwise nonsensical ending where they changed it and approved it within the movie.
Watchmen changed the ending in the movie because it fit the movie much better than the actual.
Well, and they changed the mist as well.
Well, they changed a lot of details because they had to compress a lot down to fit the movie. And they cut a whole side story out that I think was later put in the special cuts or that. But they changed the complete ending because they had to change it for a different format.
And mind you, even movies have to change their format to fit a story to the big screen.
Well, look at the upcoming Civil War. How much, like, they've changed the basis premise of it around just a fit.
That I'm going to put up to not changing the story, but because the Marvel Cinematic Universe is their own universe and they're doing what they want with it.
True.
Well, like, let's look at something like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Because the books, you know, a lot of people have read the books. I've only read 1 through 5, I think it is, but the movies
have to... Are you going to spoil something?
No.
Have you read?
I've not read.
I've read all of them.
I have also not even seen most of the movies, so.
Okay. The movies condense a lot of information.
Yeah.
And they remove a lot of information that's, depending on your point of view, could be extraneous or relatively important. It creates a lot of continuity errors, but for the suspension of disbelief is that we assume the things have happened in the book that have happened in the movie. Movies get that leeway, but books also have a lot more time to explain and to narrate and to, like, let the reader know what's going on. Because the equivalent of a 400,000 word book to a movie,
yeah,
that movie would be like 3 days long.
It doesn't take you.
Well, just take Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
That's like another... that translated over.
Word of the Rings, Wheel of Fortune, or not, Wheels of Fortune.
Cloud Atlas.
Yeah,
it's just, there's only so much you can put to screen. You kind of have to pick and choose, quote-to-quote, the Hitchhiker's important Guide parts. To the
Galaxy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which you guys still have to all read.
There we go. Like, several very popular movie series.
Yeah.
Translated from the books, and, like, it's arguable whether or not one is better than the other.
Well, it's like the example on the document was The Grinch. I think the movie was
a little
more depth than the book, but then we're also talking about a full-length movie versus a children's storybook.
Yeah. There's a lot of artistic freedom when it comes to adapting one or the other.
They've done a lot of children's book to movies.
Mm-hmm. And because movies have a lot more visual medium, mm-hmm. they can plaster a lot more on the page, and it's not going to make a difference if you miss a little bit of it.
Yeah.
So their information is much more dense. It's compact. It's efficient. Whereas
it's a fish.
It's a fish and efficient.
Movies are efficient, or the stories are efficient.
Fishes are efficient.
Or
both.
Movies
a little bit of both. Like the movies
efficient
have
to their own.
The movies have to be efficient because they can only span about an hour to
three hours,
and 1 to 3 hours. A novel, people take novels at their own pace, and so long as the reader understands how long your book is, they can spend as much time as they want poring over the details. And it's sort of like where you get a lot of the hard science fiction writers that have endless amounts of information versus people that like shorter prose. There's a lot more leeway when it comes to your narrative.
I will say one of the things... I started to read The Last Unicorn, and I only made it the first scene in, and there's this beautiful scene where she's in the woods, and there's hunters going through the woods, and I was sitting there going, like, I wish this was in the movie, because it is such a setup for what's about to happen, and shows her naivety, and shows all these things about her that you kind of get in the movie, but you don't really see that far into her character. But we'll talk about characters later. One of the main things you'll find in differences, and you'll see this in a lot more of the more action-oriented genres, is when it comes to action scenes, Just because it looks cool on the screen does not mean that it'll sound good on paper. You can try reading it out to see how it flows, and in Ocean's case, acting it out.
Which is adorable!
But the thing is, though, is you just, if you take any action scene in a movie and you write it down on paper, it's going to end up coming out completely different than what's on the screen in many ways, because you can't necessarily get the same thing. Like, the first thing that popped to mind was try to explain bullet time on paper without it sounding ridiculous.
See, at that point, it's sort of hard to differentiate between whether or not bullet time is metaphorical or actual bullet time. But, like, yeah, just think of The Matrix.
Yeah.
How different those two scenes need to be. Because one of them, you have the sound waves, and it's easy to slow down the motion and then have the characters dodge and do whatever. Whereas in the book, you need to take meticulous details and sort of...
Because you can't just say, time slowed down and he leaned backwards and dodged the bullets.
Yeah, it's so anticlimactic to go, well, time slowed down and I dodged the bullets.
Well, if you're going to write anything like that, it's just going to be anticlimactic.
Yes, but...
But you could write, you know, I saw things begin to slow. I felt I could manipulate them, move around them. The bullet caressed my cheek as it passed by.
Yeah, and it's actually a description like that that makes... I would think that would be, like, a little bit more effective than watching the whole, like...
Exactly, because that's the thing, is that description right there makes... That is a far more realistic scene than here's Neo leaning back with all the bullets.
You get to add a lot of personification to the narrative that's happening to the main character as it's happening.
Well, that's why you're looking at narrative versus in a visual versus a written. When you're visual, you can actually show multiple things at once. And with written, you have to go down to the minute details, and we can be inside the character's head or the narrator's head, and they're specifically pointing things. It'd be like going to the movie, but like, voice, watch that seventh bullet right there. It's going to just graze him. And then the blood just slightly splatters out.
Also, in a movie, most people aren't going to rewind and go, that guy fired 7 bullets out of his 6-shooter gun.
People do that.
I'm sure they do, but there's a lot
less. That's why they made Last Action Hero, to make fun of that.
Well, and Archer.
Well, Archer is just Archer.
Archer's just Archer.
And this goes to one of our things. Generally, we kind of had a little bit of a debate before we started recording here. As to, are people more willing to suspend disbelief in movies or in books when it comes to action scenes and weapons? My reference was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, where you're watching an Asian action film, you expect the wire work, and you're more willing to kind of suspend disbelief for it. Whereas if people start doing it in the book, unless you've had the proper amount of buildup and lead up to it, you're like, what the F? That person just leapt 3 bamboo trees in one go. Why is this happening?
I like how your definition of a debate is, I asked a question.
Yeah. I was like, I don't remember much of a debate there. But, I forgot the point I was going to make.
So what was the other side of that debate?
Oh, there is no suspension of disbelief when it comes to guns. If somebody knows about guns and you're wrong, they will tell you about it.
That's with any subject material.
Especially guns. They're passionate. But
I think it's just because...
It's any subject material.
I think because, like, you can gloss over a lot more details when you're talking about something like a movie, because you are a third-person tight... You're essentially... It's like you're sitting in a levitating chair, just slowly panning around these characters, watching what they're doing. You don't get any insight to what they're thinking about, the nuances of what they're talking about. There's no directed attention to what anyone's doing aside from the advanced close-ups and all that.
Yeah.
So with these kinds of scenes, there's a lot more attention to detail about how these characters are doing the moves and the way they're being executed and the characters' motivations behind them.
something that was brought up in the book, Write the Fight Right. Something that you come across in books that generally people, if you're in a fight in a book and you get hurt or your character gets hurt, generally people want more of a realism to it than in movies. Because quite frankly, fighting is kind of not really beautiful unless choreographed, which most movies are. But I find that if you're writing a fight scene in a book, people will generally want something far more realistic than a lot of the visual effects that you find in movies. No one really sits there and looks at, you know, the over-the-top action films and goes, oh, that's not realistic at all.
He just
punched that guy in the forehead 6 times. How come his hand not broken?
Well, and just imagine watching a movie where, say, Bruce Willis, you know, say if Bruce Willis got like shot in the leg and then instead of getting right back up and kicking ass again, he's put in the emergency ward, has to recover for 3 months, learn to walk again, then like go back to the gym and, you know, train his strength back up, then he goes back out and kicks some bad guys.
Like, worst book ever.
It would work kind of as a book because you can kind of gloss through over that, but like it would be like the most boring movie ever unless that was the central point. People do the same thing in the book. What's that?
People do the same thing in action books already.
Yeah, well, and there is that too, but... Fine, destroy my entire point.
I let you finish.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, it's always...
I think people expect a lot more realism from books.
There's...
with the exception of, like, science fiction and fantasy.
Well, there was...
I don't think realism as much as just... The point that you're going to read a book is because the immersion level is going to be different than a movie. In a movie, you're going to be watching it, and you're taking it in as you're hearing it. And so your senses are engaged, maybe not as much as your mind. But when you're reading a book, you can't look at the story. You're just looking at the words. You can't hear what's going on. So you're engaging your mind. And so in that part, you need the book to engage those senses for you. Tell me what the babbling brook sounds like. Tell me what spring smells like. You know, how does that fair maiden look? Because I have to put this picture in my head. And then it becomes a process of how much details do I want you to give and how much do I want your imagination to fill in the rest.
Like when I think about the comparison between like a description within a story and a description within a movie, comes back to sort of my Trick or Treat 3 story, where it's, you know, based in like 1800s Ireland, pseudo 1800s Ireland, and you know, the simple mention of a two-story house, which, when I had initially written it, I was like, oh, nobody will bother checking that. And then somebody's like, so what about that thing? I'm like, you're right. Let's change that thing. I feel like movies get a little bit more leeway with that because the visual representation is there. It's already imposed on the viewer. They don't have to think about it much more than that.
Well, I think an important part is what you'd said earlier, where, you know, if you're in the movie theater, you can't go, hey, everybody, pause the movie, rewind 5 seconds, look at that again. You know, if you're home with the movie, sure, you can rewind it over and over again, but few people are going to do that. Well, in a book, it's much easier to go, wait, what was that on that other page?
I do that often.
Well, I was thinking to... one comment that I'll mention later, but I was thinking of James Axler's Deathland series, where one of the characters is a time traveler and he carries the old school Lamat pistol, which fires the ball and cap and like is hard to load. And they would go into military redoubts where there's all these stockpiled weapons, and every so often they were just happened to be, oh, look, someone from the 2000s and whatever's has happened to stockpile a completely, you know, ineffective and not used form of bullet. And it's just like, and I was like, and if this was a movie, just thinking now, if this was a movie, they'd go in there, oh, look, ammunition. Yeah. Everyone would stock up. And no one would care.
Thank goodness we stumbled upon the historical building of, like, old ammunition. Like, good luck for us.
So it's just one of those things where I just thought about that and was like, but yeah, they would just walk in. Oh, everyone crack open the ammo cases.
That's a scene from Demolition Man.
Like, and to come back to the whole thing that people can't rewind a movie is that if you read a point in a book or a novel or a story that trips you up, you read it and you're like, that doesn't sound right. And then you read it again, and you read it again, and then you read a bit more, and then you read it again. Movies don't allow you to do that.
That's true.
And so it's a lot easier to get stuck up on the minute details of something, and so having them that much more correct is a benefit to you, because the less your reader is distracted by extraneous details or incorrect details, the smoother the read is going to be for them.
Yeah. Magic. It's all magic. A wizard did it.
And I'm like, anybody can sit through a bad movie and make fun of it. It is excruciating to read through a bad book.
Yeah.
You just can't make fun of it. You just want to rip it into pieces.
I just want to rip the book in half.
But that goes back to what Ocean said, where you're reading a book and your mind's engaged. You're watching a movie and... you know, it's just kind of...
Oh, it's like I went to see Death Race.
If you stop paying attention to a book, the book stops.
Yeah.
If you stop paying attention to the movie, it still goes.
Yeah, I was like, well, I've gone to see movies like Death Race because I'm like, you know what? I want to see cars explode and physics... I want to go to the movie where physics goes to die. Like, you can get away with stuff like that in a book too, but it's a very particular...
Well, it's like, could you imagine the book for Expendables?
Oh.
That would be like...
an awful read.
Is there a book for Expendables?
Probably. One of the things I found very interesting is on the conveyance of visual to written media is some of the most popular My Little Pony fan fictions are the ones where they've nailed an episode beat by beat and written essentially what an episode would be if you wrote it down.
Do you think that has to do with the imagination of the reader?
I think it does.
Also being indoctrinated by My Little Pony?
I think it's probably both, but it's one of those things where... because I've thought about, well, maybe I should try my... because that would be the ultimate test. Write an episode of a children's TV show.
Well, when I was in my fan fiction days, a lot of... the goal I had when writing these things were to match the characters... match the episode, like essentially match the cadence
mm-hmm.
of a Naruto episode or Digimon episode as the case may be, to try to simulate it as best you can. And I think there's a bit of a strange line to be drawn between writing for fan fiction versus writing for your own story. Because when people don't have the previous experience to draw, like if you're writing about something that already exists,
mm-hmm.
a lot of those quote unquote visual cues still exist.
True.
They exist as concepts in writing as opposed to pictures on the screen. If you're writing your own story, those cues no longer exist. So you are therefore obligated to convey that properly to your reader.
Anyway, so now that we've done that, we keep mentioning flashbacks. There's something that you generally see in a lot of movies, generally to tell a certain something that's happened in the character's history. A really good example of it in a movie is The Grinch, where it is used as this is how the Grinch became the Grinch. And it's slated from what we were watching over the holidays as one of the better uses of this is how a movie has made a character that much, you know, all the feels for why the Grinch is the Grinch. It explains everything and does it in a very excellent manner. You can get that within books. However, there are some cases, such as a book I'm currently reading called Lucky's Girl by William Holloway, where the book started off about the main character arriving in this town, and then his old school buddy shows up, And then suddenly it flips into a flashback that lasts for about 50% of the book, and then it hits back into reality. Now, when you hit back into reality, you're like, okay, this makes sense as to why he's acting this way. But you've also just read 50% of a book that doesn't take place in the main storyline. It's all stuff that's happened, where it would have been better if it was kind of like It, where it's split into two segments. What happens as a kid, what happens as an adult.
Yeah, and this is what we were talking about in the the mall, because like, it just, even as you were describing it to me, I was getting frustrated about it, because it doesn't make sense to, like, the story obviously starts when this guy is a kid,
mm-hmm.
and that's where the story should start. If you started it with the quote-unquote flashback that takes up 50% of the book, and then fast forward 20 years to when this guy's an adult.
Yeah.
Coming back to his hometown, you've set a precedence for the hometown. You've set a precedence for the character, the protagonist. And you have all of the information without being removed from it because it's a flashback.
Right.
There's a very strange disconnect when you're talking about flashbacks and you're experiencing it through a looking glass or a looking glass.
Yeah. And I mean, there's something to be said for when it's a short flashback to explain a little bit of information, or, you know, depending on how it's done, it's another thing to sit there and have it take up so much of space that you almost essentially create a nested story. And that, as you said, in the case of something like this, and where you end up, because you have all these characters you introduce in the first few pages, and suddenly you don't see them for 100, you know, plus pages. Well, by the time you get back to them, you're just like, eh, I just went through all this stuff. Yeah. And
like, you barely remember who these characters are because it's halfway through the book and you've seen them once.
Yeah.
You have to essentially reintroduce them again. You already know who these people are, so like, I think people underestimate just how much mental fortitude it requires to read through something like a flashback or something that essentially tells you what you should already know.
Yeah.
They can be long and tiring, and then by the time you're done reading, you're like, okay, so when does the actual story start?
Yeah, and I mean, that's why generally flashbacks tend to be a shorter element. And I mean, they can be really good elements if done properly. It's just a lot of people, as far as from my reading experience, I can't remember the last time I read a flashback other than this book. You know, it's just usually something that's very short, very sweet, and this happened, and you know, someone's usually telling another person, hey, this is what happened. You know, back in the day, Roland was a little ferret. He had a little, you know, red ball. He lost it in the creek and the otter stole it. This is why he hates water and red balls.
And otters.
This would have been better if it was blue balls, but yeah. Whatever.
That's what editing's for, guys.
But again, it's flashbacks are one of those things where, you know, when they happen on the screen, visually, they happen and it's like, awesome, it's over. It would
be like showing the main character coming up to, like, you know, this big boss hideout, and then going into a flashback lead, like, it's like the whole Dick Tracy kind of thing. It's like, but let me tell you how I got to this particular situation.
But even then, that's not so bad. It's just, yes.
The A-Team movie is really good for handling flashbacks.
Have not seen it.
It's good. They'll have a situation happen, and then they'll have a flashback on how they got to the situation. They'll have a situation happen, then they'll have a flashback on how they got out. I thought it was well done.
I'd have to see how that works.
Like Ocean's 11?
I watched Ocean's 11 when it came out in theaters, and I haven't seen it since. That was a long time
ago. See, Ocean's 11 was a really... 18,
wasn't it?
Hmm? 18 wasn't that long ago, plus my family's obsessed with it, so I go over fairly often, and, yeah. You know, they really like
Ocean's
the whole
11 was, well,
flying a tank.
You got
thing.
This guy, how'd you get that guy flashback? Yeah. We did this the first, yeah. Well, we did this.
Ocean's 11 was a really effective use of withholding information from your viewers for the express intent of surprising them later, and then informing the viewer based on a flashback.
Would that work the same way in a fiction, though?
That would be really hard to write. I think it feels cheap.
In a way, like, it really depends on what kind of a narrative you're using.
I still think it would be really, really hard to write, though.
Because in my mind, it feels a lot of, like, time jumping, where... Because you'll get those novels where it's like, okay, this is present tense, flashback to whenever. Present tense, flashback to whenever. Because there's been novels that I've read, now I'm starting to recall, where it'll go, here's a chapter, present day. Here's a chapter in the past.
I hate those.
A chapter in the present day. Here's a chapter in the past. And it gets to a point where you're just like, effing stop it.
That has to be a very specific stylistic choice and needs to be done well.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. And it's taken on multiple times, usually in the form of time traveling novels. You know, things like Doctor Who, where you have these reoccurring themes over and over and over and over again, multiple paradoxes upon paradoxes upon paradoxes, and it's really hard to maintain, whether or not in a visual form or your written form. What were we talking about initially?
Flashbacks.
Were flashbacks as effective? Like, would the Ocean's 11 thing be as effective in writing? And I think that depends on what kind of a narrative you're using. Because depending on whether or not you're using first person type, third person omniscient, third person semi-omniscient, third person semi-tight or whatever, all of these allow you to convey different perspectives from the story. And if you're trying to do the Ocean's 11 thing, where like you flash back to information that was missed before,
like Sherlock Holmes,
that was an example I was thinking of as well.
That's a good one for that.
It's Sherlock Holmes is an effective use of that, but if you do it the wrong way, it's going to feel cheap, like you just withheld this information because you were lazy and didn't want to...
Yeah, I felt like that reading a couple mysteries. It's like, okay, I don't appreciate reading this mystery, like, because...
It feels cheap when the reason you couldn't figure out a mystery was because that information was deliberately held from you.
Yeah, and like Ocean pointed out, the old Sherlock books were like that a lot.
So, now that we've talked a bit about flashbacks, characters, something that tends to differ drastically between film and novels. With film, you're usually presented with as much information as you're presented with characters. It's not nearly as the same amount as that you get in novels, generally with novels or stories.
What do you mean?
Usually with fiction, with movies, you got your character, you usually will discover certain things about them. But generally I find in fiction, specifically novels, you'll get a lot more of an, if it's, you know, half decent, you're a lot more information about a character and their motives than you will in the new movie. Generally, depending on what voice it's written, if it's first person, then obviously you're getting their internal dialogues. But if it's third person, just generally because they've got a lot more time to sit there and fill out why they're doing certain actions.
Well, you get to see a lot of how a character is by just how they look in a movie. Like, just the way a character is moving, acting, what they're holding. It's just a lot of quick visual cues that you see in just a really short matter of scene time. Where in a story, you have to introduce this character. You have to write out all of these details. You have to give reasons for... Or not reasons, but you have to give more... explanation of what they're doing at that point.
Because
otherwise they just seem like it's more useless information thrown in a story.
You can do little bits of information that teach a person a character. You just do it in a different way.
Consider,
you still have quick visual clues. That's just a quick visual sentence.
Consider how you're generally, quote-unquote, allowed to describe a character and what they're thinking, how they're thinking it in a movie versus a novel. Generally, the default kind of narrative is a third-person type narrative on, like, generally centered on one specific character,
yeah,
maybe two or three. You're still allowed some leeway when it comes to getting into that person's head in a way that you're not typically allowed to in a movie without a very specific style choice, like, say, Spider-Man. Because in Spider-Man, it's like, hey, I'm just a normal kid, blah, 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 blah. I'm Spider-Man.
Watch me emo out.
And then you jump into a third-person type narrative. Well, quote-unquote narrative. Whereas if that were written as a book, it would...
Like the comic kinda, book it is?
It would be kind of like that.
Also a visual medium, though.
One problem I really have with, like, the long, drawn-out introduction, like the piecemeal, this is this part of the character, this is this part of the character. I hate reading three pages into a story before I figure out what fucking gender the main character is. I have read books before where it's like, oh, I've been reading this in a girl's voice because, shocker, I'm a girl. Or I've been reading it in a boy's voice because I have a moment where I realize that, no, not everyone writes about girls, they write about boys. And then I get to the point where I'm like, oh, it's a female character. So then I have to reread the whole thing again.
This person sounds like it has a penis.
Yes, and then I have to readjust my mental way of reading this because no longer is this character what I'd made them out to begin with.
And that's bad narrative. But granted, it's a lot easier to tell whether or not a character is male or female when you get to see their face full on.
Now, one of the things that I mentioned is one of the faults of film is that when you're presented with a character, generally you are basing a lot off of how they look to you as a person versus in a novel where you'll get their physical descriptions, but either you will have your own mental image, or in some cases, which I mentioned in some of our notes later on, you'll flat out just alter the character completely for your own reasons and not care.
So why is that a fault?
Well, it's just, in my case, I use Twilight, because a lot of people, like, the books are actually not that bad. A lot of people hate the movies because of the actor for Bella and the actor for Edward.
I've actually got a pretty good contrast between the books and the movies. The Hunger Games, people flipped shit when they found out Rin was black. Because in the books...
People always flip out when a character actually ends up black.
I know, but in the book... In the book themselves...
They also just did Hermione lately.
Rin is depicted as having olive skin. And... That's all that needs to be said about that. That's what she is. But then you present something like that in the movie, and suddenly there's a face, there's a definitive description of what this character is like. You look at that person, and that's what that character looks like. You have a bit of freedom when it comes to describing somebody in the narrative. You describe their general... overall depiction, like their, you know, what kind of clothes they wear, or the scar on their left cheek, or the glasses on their face. But people are generally free to envision that character how they like. In a movie, you pretty much right from the get-go, you know exactly what that character looks like, and all that.
That's not a flaw of a movie, though.
No, I'm not saying it's a flaw.
That's expectations from a novel to a movie. It's the way that writing is one tool to immerse you, is that you let the person fill in the gaps and fill in their own characters. That's why we even have... I'm not disagreeing with you. It's why we have our own social common statuses that we imply on characters to begin with. For me, I always forget that the character... I always assume a character is straight until proven otherwise.
Right.
Which is a weird thing, I know, but that's just, you know, because we like to mirror ourselves onto the characters around us. So the things about us are what we first put onto a character. Like you said, you're a female, so you picture characters that they you don't know yet as female.
Especially if the author's female, too.
I don't remember what book it was. There was one that I read where I was like, okay, straight male character. Oh, no, gay male character. Halfway through the book, wait, female main character. How did I miss this? It's like, how did I miss this?
Tantor's story in Pulp, I read it, I thought it was a male. And then it's like, well, I've got to save my boyfriend in prison. I'm like, oh, so it's a gay male. And it's like, oh, no, wait, it's actually a straight woman.
Well, like,
but where are the cues that you're missing for that, right?
Well, I don't know if it was me or not. I'm not going to bother an author for it.
Think about the cue between, like, say you have a gay male in a in a movie. You know, maybe he's wearing like a rainbow bracelet or something. Fairly subtle, something that not a lot of people would notice unless there's like the, you know, extreme close-up on this rainbow bracelet. But you mentioned such a detail in a book, and like, that guy has a rainbow bracelet. He's gay, etc.
Well, look at the new Star Wars movie. Finn and Poe, like, everyone's kind of questioning Finn's sexuality. Who is he chasing after? Does it matter?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I didn't know that was a thing.
It's a thing.
It's the love triangle thing.
Yeah, there's but a lot.
You watch the movie, and you're like, this has no bearing on anything. And if they define it, then somebody might get mad because they thought it was the other one. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect the character at any point.
No.
But like, if you consider,
I just like to know the gender.
If you had written something like that into a novel, you would have a lot of opportunity to explore those thought processes.
Yeah.
Without it impacting the actual story, it can be a bit of flavor text. Whereas in a movie, it might seem a little extraneous.
Well, I think the difference between showing characters in a movie versus a book is that a movie we're seeing external uses of that character. Well, in a book, we're seeing internal uses of that character.
And this goes to the differences why your book is not a movie, is if you just write it using those external influences, you're missing out on it.
You can still do external uses, but it's going to be harder to do because generally a lot of those are visual, but you can do it in such a way that it's like, you know, pick your tool for the job, and you describe all the tools on the bench, and what they pick up could mean a lot about who they are.
Yeah.
Versus, like, in a movie, they're just going to, like, you're just going to see that, and they're going to pick it up.
Actually.
And then a book, if you might actually have them, like, mull over, well, there's the saw, there's the hammer, but I really like the chains.
You reminded me of the one scene in How to Train Your Dragon where Hiccup picks up the knife and the shield, which is a demonstration of his character, whereas his dad is sitting on his throne and going, I'd have gone for the axe. As that kind of dichotomy.
There was something that kind of made me... Ocean's whole thing just kind of reminded me of Clive Barker just wrote basically the death of Pinhead in a book. And he's describing it because there's an interview wonderfully written where he's talking about Pinhead. And because he did his first book, Hellbound Heart, and then there's this book. Between those two, you have all these movies that were made. And people are like, oh, Pinhead's vigilante's an anti-hero, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, in this book, Pinhead dies messily. He gets exactly what he deserves because Pinhead is not good. Pinhead is a villain. And everyone seems to forget this fact that he is not a good person. He's a lord of hell. Why, you know,
he's a villain. He's supposed to get his comeuppance.
See, that's the wonder of interpretation.
Yeah.
People get to come up with whatever the hell they want.
Leaving the artists foaming at the mouth going, why?
Now,
that happens in books, too. You can feel sympathy for an antagonist.
Yeah, books and movies. And that's why you see a lot of the...
But he designed them solely so that there was no sympathy. Like, in the original Hellbound Heart, he's a bad, bad person. And it's only through the movies
Consider the books and movies that are like, look at this bad guy. He is bad. Or is he? And then they shift the perspective. And I haven't seen Despicable Me, but I assume that's what that's about.
You haven't seen Despicable Me?
No. I don't intend to at this point. The Minions have scared me right off.
Well, there's
good point.
Perfect example.
Have you played... I can't remember the game.
Interview with a Vampire. First book starts off with Louis. Lestat's an asshole, and you're like, what the hell? And then you go into the second book, and you're like, okay, I understand why Lestat's who he is. And then you get a whole bunch of other books about Lestat where as you read them, your opinion is more and more of, Lestat's an asshole.
Have you played Braid?
Yes.
So,
wonderful.
Yes. Because that has that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, that'd be really interesting because, like, that's sort of a media that can really only be done through game.
The Incarnations of Immortality is also fantastic because the first five books Satan is the main antagonist through all of them, and then book six is Satan's book. And it's wonderful to see everything happen on the other side and actually feel sympathy for the antagonist this whole time that you've been hating.
Legend is a good one for that.
Which one's Legend?
Oh, the book, not the movie.
I am Legend?
No, just Legend.
What's Legend? Do you know that movie played by Will Smith with the zombies?
I am Legend?
No, that's I Am Legend.
Oh, sorry.
Legend with...
What's Legend?
What's his name? Oh my God, Tim Curry.
Nope.
No.
Oh God, it's an
old... I love Tim Curry, but
it's an old movie.
It's got a teenager Tom Cruise in it.
Yeah, and a very young Tim Curry, and it was basically... The demon kidnaps the princess who's betrothed to the prince kind of deal, and the demon's just kind of alone and turned into a jerk situation.
Waffling about.
Yeah, but it's old.
So our last one of the things here is certain cues that work on film don't work in novels, at least not without some help.
So wait, what was the argument on characters?
The argument was is that...
Well, I think you said it best, Ocean, is that the narrative in a book is an introspective.
Okay.
Whereas the character development in movies are more...
Yeah.
Because you had said that, like, characters are better in books than movies.
They seem more in-depth in books. Yeah. And it might be because that's my preferred medium as opposed to movies. But you tend to get more of a sense of who a character is through narration in books than you do in movies, I find.
I think it goes back to the interest.
But, yeah. So. And your point knocked it out of the park. And again, this is why your writing is not... You're not writing a movie. You're writing a story. Is that...
Like I wouldn't have said it better. It's
yeah.
The fact that we get to see the inside perspective in a book and the outside perspective in a movie... And that's based purely on how they present information.
Mm-hmm. Now, certain cues that work on film won't work in novels, at least without some help. My example is Sixth Sense, where the red is used in scenes of importance involving Bruce Willis. Visually, it's very impactful, and once you're aware of it, it makes for a completely different experience. However, in writing, it loses some of its effectiveness. You can still set up cues like that, but it requires more thought to have it be subtle and not in your face. Because as soon as, and this came back to something we mentioned earlier, where as soon as you make a point of, you know, let's go with a loaded gun on the mantle, in a movie, there's a gun on the mantle, you notice it, and it can be the subtlest sense that you know it's going to be used in there. If you mention a loaded gun on the mantle in your book, you know it's going to be used.
Yeah, that's setting off all sorts of
flags. Wouldn't Cabin in the Woods be a difficult write, then? Just with how many set-offs they have distributed throughout the whole house?
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
That was the point of it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, just that's why I'm saying, wouldn't that be a difficult write? Because you'd be so busy... putting all these things in that
because you're still in the cabin, they're still picking up the pieces or looking at it. In fact, in doing that in a book format, you're actually calling more attention to the items that they're picking up, which would make them that much more of are they going to choose that one, are they going to choose that one and then not.
A simple way to avoiding Chekhov's gun is by describing more things. Mm-hmm. And when you describe a list of items, the most memorable items are going to be the first and last items. So don't put them as the last or the first.
True.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Brick mantle with a row of family pictures, a hunting picture with the gun, and then...
You have to introduce multiple of these concepts to prevent any one from standing out.
Yeah.
Which...
There's other ways of doing it, too, but that's...
It's one of them. I think as far as, like, movies that work a lot more off of visual cues, like, better than any book could, things like... Like a lot of drug movies, typically, like A Clockwork Orange, Becoming John Malkovich.
I should probably watch these movies.
Yeah, honestly, I've only seen Becoming John Malkovich, but Fear and Loathing, I believe, would be another one.
That was a weird movie to go through.
It was dumb.
These are such memorable movies, such visual movies, and
Pulp Fiction.
Yep.
Naked Lunch is one that I want to read the book. Because the movie apparently just had so many issues converting the written text that they left out certain points in the edit and they had to shift things around. But that movie's a complete mindfuck, and it's just the book, I'm just like, this is a Canadian, or a piece of Canadian literature, and it's like, I really should read this. But in the end, movies are based on their own kind of formula that doesn't really work with books. And much the same, books have a certain criteria and formula for them that doesn't work with movies.
Like just look at things like the Hollywood formula versus like writing a book in 3 days.
Yeah. And this all comes back to, as was stated earlier, your time investment to a movie is far different than your time investment into a book. And what you're putting into it cerebrally is far greater in a book than in a movie.
You have to make reading a book feel like it's worthwhile, because a lot of people aren't going to continue reading your book if they feel like it's a waste of time.
A lot of the time,
and I'm the same way as Tarl. That
I'm not.
Even if I don't like a story or a book, I will finish it.
If I don't like it, I don't see why I should waste my goddamn time.
Do you feel that a movie has to work harder than a book to engage you on an intellectual level?
I feel like they have a lot less time for me to be emotionally invested in it.
Well, not emotionally, just like...
Do you feel that, or do you feel there's just less movies out there trying to target you on an intellectual
level? See, that's the other question, is because
there's not a lot of movies that I feel target me intellectually.
Books doing that.
Mm, true.
I think that's a whole other discussion.
It's hard to say, because there are plenty of good movies out there. And despite what, you know, some people say, good movies are still coming out.
Well, and it's all different audiences.
Yeah.
You know, there's always the flack for the generic action movie of the year or Fast and Furious bajillion, but they sell.
And people enjoy them. People tend to take way too much pride in being jaded or cynical.
Or hipster.
Or hipster. Like, I don't like describing what the actual hipster definition
is. Well, I just mean the whole, I only watch indie movies, or...
I'm not even coming from that angle. Like, people
oh,
are...
Oh, well, I am.
Yeah. But people... there's a lot of reviewers out there nowadays that nitpick on, like, the finer details. And granted, these aren't invalid comments or theories or anything like that, but people pick on a lot of these minute details, and then a lot of people pick up on that, and so a lot of these movies, I think, are just being picked apart with no real reason or...
Just because they're bored.
Or anything like that. And like the same kind of thing with some books as well. That it's... Good content is still coming out, and that's whether or not we feel intellectually challenged by them is an entirely different topic, but... Point made somehow.
Well then, any final points?
Take the time to remember when you're writing your next story that it is not like a movie, and that you should take a little bit of time to consider how you're going to put these events down on paper that make sense to an avid reader.
Read more!
If you haven't already, as I said, watch a movie, read a book.
I want to assign a little bit of homework, if I may. And
are you going to do the homework?
Yeah, are you going to do the homework?
No, because I've done it already. Take a book that you've read or a book that you're going to read that has a movie equivalent and compare the two side by side. See how the movie deals with the same plot points and just the biggest differences you can find with the movie versus the book.
Well, see, what was the book that you did?
Well, like, I've read Harry Potter. There's
well, see, that's,
I should go see The Hobbit.
There's part of me that wants to get the movie novelization by Alan Dean Foster for Force Awakens and just see what he brings to the table versus what is in the actual, you know, movie itself, because he's had access to the notes. He's had access to the things because he's probably going to be writing the next two books. So there are things that he can put in there that you wouldn't necessarily see in the movie.
I want to do the same thing with Cloud Atlas. Because when I went to see that, I'm like, well, that was pretty good. What's the book like?
Yeah, because usually if a movie's phenomenal, you're just like, oh, well, I should read the book, because the book should, in theory, be equally phenomenal.
And I want to see how true to the book that the movie actually was, because that was a long movie.
Yeah. Anyway. Any piece of advice, Ocean? Tigrox is done. Stick a fork in him.
Ow. It's not a fork.
It was less pointy than one.
It's more pointy. Tines are not that sharp.
Wah, wah.
You poke yourself in the face every time you took a bite.
Anyway, this has been another riveting episode of Fangs and Fonts. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please email us at podcast@fangs... No, that's not our email. fangsandfonts@gmail.com or facebook.com/fangsandfonts, or follow us on Twitter @fangsandfonts. Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.
Bye.
I'm waiting for that.